Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Dendies. I'm Jordan Maccabee of Roto Baller, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. One race left. We are down to the championship finale at Phoenix. The 2023 season coming to an end. Ryan Blaney wins his way into the championship four, joining Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, and William Byron, who got in on points, to make up this year's championship four contenders, the final four. Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Chris Buescher, and Tyler Reddick eliminated after the round of eight. We have our final four set, and we got a pretty good race at Martinsville, according to Jeff Gluck's poll. It was about 78%, I believe, said that it was a good race. Ryan Blaney had an absolute rocket ship. They brought that the car to beat to that track. He qualified 11th, but you know, during that first stint, you saw him making passes on the outside at Martinsville, which is, I mean, you have to have a damn good car just to do that. Obviously, there's still some issues that we've seen with this car on the short tracks. It's still hard to pass for a lot of other players or drivers, but when you have a car that's as good as Ryan Blaney's, you can pass. So that, I think, was a good sign. Do you agree that it was a good race overall? We saw Martin Truex Jr. get the pole. He led 47 laps, could not overcome that speeding penalty on pit road, finished 12th. Byron surprisingly struggled for most of the day, rebounded for a 13th place finish to get in on points. And then obviously Hamlin, who won the first stage, finished second in stage two, led the most laps, finished third, and got eliminated. Will not be getting a championship this year. Overall, though, do you think that this was a good race? Was it a typical Martinsville race? You know, kind of what we've come to expect with this new next-gen car.
I thought it was a really good race. I don't think it was the best Martinsville race I've ever seen. No chance on that. But I thought it was a really good race. I thought it was getting back in the direction that we want for Martinsville. And you could pass, like you said, if you had a really good car, you could pass. If you were maybe close to having a really good car, you could pass, but you had to work for it. But, you know, we saw passes made. If you were good out front, but then mediocre in traffic, improve your car. I mean, Truex had that speeding penalty, and he lamented that. You know, I couldn't get back to the front. It's so hard to pass, blah, blah, blah. First of all, don't speed. Second of all, get better. Because some other guys got better, and they were able to make passes. Ryan Blaney, clearly the class of the field. I'm not going to get into my whine about it because it involves this, but let's just say he was good. And regardless of whether I had a bet on him or not, which of course I did, won a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It was a good race. And even if he had finished second or not gotten his way back through the field as far as he wanted, you know, maybe if he'd only gotten to second or third or something like that, still would have been a good race. I enjoyed it. I thought right off the bat, we saw passing. We saw our handful of Martinsville wrecks. There was a sequence of cautions there. I think it was stage two, maybe early stage three. And then it chilled out, and we had the longest Martinsville green flag run in, like, decades, which is cool. It is cool because we saw our sequence of crashes at Martinsville that we have come to know from many years past, although not as much recently with this car, but that we started to see a little bit more of again, which I know people like, especially because it's not a track where typically safety is going to be an issue, you know, driver safety or injuries. So that was good. We saw pretty much everything we wanted to see at Martinsville. And so I thought it was a good race. And was it the best Martinsville race ever? No, but I thought it was definitely a step in the right direction.
Agreed. I definitely think it was a good. It gives us a little bit more hope heading into next year and hopefully, you know, getting this car more figured out and everything else. You know, they announced today, Ford announced their new body. Looks absolutely badass in my opinion. Yeah. And Ford was the class of the field at Martinsville. Four of the top five positions were Ford. Obviously Blaney got the win. Eric Almirola finished second. Chase Briscoe ran top five all day. Was glad to hit that top 10 bet at plus 130. As you said, you had a massive, massive day on Blaney there, getting him. I think you got him, what, 12 to 1, 14 to 1?
14 to 1, had two units on it, and also hit Austin Cindric top 10, which covered all my top 10 bets, and then doubled my money on my top 10 bets. Hit a couple head-to-heads that I wasn't able to track on FanDuel at, like, plus 2. Or, no, sorry, hit one of the two, but both of them were at, like, over plus 200. So because I hit one of the two, it means I made money on the head-to-head bets as well. So really, really big day at Martinsville for betting, which is, You know, it's great. I had that couple 2.5-3 month downswing. I had a nice positive month in there, and then continued the downswing, or not positive month, positive week in there, but then continued the downswing, and then just brought it all back. Literally made up those whole 2 or 3 months and then some in one race.
Right. Yeah, it was. I'm telling you, man, top 10 bets have been my bread and butter this past month and a half. As you, I was with you on Cindric, had him at, I think, 13-1 or 14-1. Had Gilliland from early in the week, who finished 10th. I had him plus 710. And then I had that Briscoe. So that was a nice betting day. And I live bet Blaney when it was like 60 laps in. I saw him getting all those fastest laps. Before I headed into work, I hit Blaney. So,
nice.
Yeah, nice little betting day. It's always good to get hit those. And we'll get into the betting lines for Phoenix a little bit later in this episode, because I think there's a ton of value out there, and I already have a ton of bets out there, as do a lot of other people industry. This is becoming Ryan Blaney at Martinsville Part 2 in a weird way. But, Todd Gilliland getting a top 10. Austin Cindric had a great car in practice. He was top 5 speed in practice, qualified back in 21st. He was still sitting there at 12-1, 13-1, 14-1 on top 10 on race day. Raced his way up there into a 9th place finish. And then, of course, like I said, Briscoe was there top 5, as was Logano. Those were the two other Fords in the top 5. One Chevrolet in the top 12. Is that surprising?
Yeah.
Is it concerning for Phoenix?
No, I don't necessarily think it's concerning for Phoenix. I mean, Ford has absolutely smacked this track recently, Martinsville specifically. And so I wasn't surprised to see Ford have a strong day. I think I was a little more surprised to see how bad Hendrick Motorsports struggled. Obviously, Chase Elliott led a bunch of those laps up, but it was partly on strategy. You know, Eric Almirola ended up catching him after a chunk of that. And I was not surprised. I mean, Stewart Haas Racing has been strong here specifically. Team Penske has been strong here specifically. So, and you look, who are the Fords in the top 5? It was 2 Stewart Haas and 2 Team Penske. So not really surprising there. I don't think Toyota had a bad day. I mean, Denny Hamlin was really good. Truex was fine until he got through. Like I said, he had his issue back in traffic. Ty Gibbs was running really well until Joey Logano decided to just knock the shit out of him. So I think it's just one of those kind of a little bit of variance, and I don't think it necessarily should be concerning going towards Phoenix, because Phoenix and Martinsville are probably the two most dissimilar of the shorter, flatter tracks.
Right. One thing I did notice, and obviously we're going to get to talking about Phoenix here soon, but Jim Sonnes tweeted today, Hendrick Motorsports on short flat tracks. First 3 races this year, 3 wins, 5 top 5s, 9 top 10s. Past 3 races on short flat tracks, 0 wins, 1 top 5, 2 top 10s. Now, obviously, some of that's due to bad luck, but it has to be a little concerning for guys that have championship tickets on Byron or Larson and whether they hedge. And that's a topic I want to definitely get into about Phoenix. Because I've gotten quite a few DMs about, you know, should I hedge, should I not, with people holding, you know, especially Blaney long shot tickets. So, we'll get into Phoenix. First, though, let's do Wine About It right here, presented by Luvabella Winery. I've been sitting on mine for 2 weeks now, because obviously we didn't record last week with you being out sick. I was just too busy to find a replacement and everything else. I said, screw it, just skip the episode. So I've been sitting on this for 2 weeks. Now, if you guys have been following my Twitter, you know that Tipico and Betfred can both blow me. Both of those sports books can kiss my ass. So Tipico basically declined a $2.50 bet from me and basically told me they don't want my action anymore. Betfred did a similar thing. And I will admit I made a mistake on Betfred a couple weeks ago with a bet. The line moved. It was live on this show. The line moved.
Yeah.
I accepted the line movement. I didn't mean to. And then I just asked them to cancel it, thinking, you know, in good faith, they'll cancel it. But no, they didn't. But here's what I don't get. And this is, you know, we see this time and time again from the sports betting industry. But you have these books like Tipico, who literally won't take bets from me anymore. Like, I tried today to take Harvick top 10 there, and they declined it. Well, first I had to manually request manual review. They declined it, and then they took Harvick top 10 off the board and then moved the line to minus 175. They had it at minus 130. Why are you setting lines if you're not going to take action? Like, what? I don't get it. And why aren't you taking action from people when your lines are, specifically when your lines are in line with everybody else, every other book? Because they still won't take that action. So I don't understand. It's not like I'm betting, trying to bet tens of thousands of dollars here. Like, you won't even take a $50 bet from somebody. That just seems fucking weird to me. I don't get it. And I need someone to explain to me why. Because it's not like I've taken this book for, you know, $1 million. Like, is losing NASCAR bets on, you know, I think my win rate on Tipico this year is like 70%. Is losing NASCAR bets at that rate going to bankrupt you from one player? I just don't get it.
So here's the thing. And there's a Washington, D.C. based book. I don't remember the name of it. But they lost. It was between NASCAR and one other sport. I forget what it was. I don't know if it was MMA or golf or something. They got absolutely cleaned up on those two sports, and they just stopped offering bets on those two sports. And it sounds like that's kind of what is happening at Tipico or Betfred, where they're setting these nice, long, juicy lines, and they're just getting their clock cleaned on these specific sports, which, A, is their fault, and B, makes it shitty that they're no longer even just accepting bets on it, because, you know, it's one thing for you to get limited and not be able to bet, but that means it's probably happened to a bunch of others too, because they're probably getting their clock clean. I don't know for sure. I don't have data on it, but my guess is they're probably getting their clock clean on that sport, on NASCAR. And so it's anybody taking advantage of these, we got to stop the bleeding, that kind of thing. And even if it's only 50, 100 bucks here and there from you, if it's 50, 100 bucks here and there from 100 people, that's tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars suddenly.
I guess I'm just confused because, like, they won't take my bets, but if, like, I have a group chat with a couple of my friends and I say, hey, I like this bet, it's on Tipico, and then they go and bet it and it's fine. Right. So it's just, it's frustrating. Like, I want to be able to get these lines and everything else, and it's just, it pisses me off that they don't want to take it. It's, like, that they set these lines and then they don't take it. It just pisses me off.
It's absolutely ridiculous. When you're setting lines in line with the rest of the industry and then you're not taking action, what are you even doing? Like, literally, what are you doing? And
why?
It kind of comes down to the state of sports betting in the U.S., though, unless you're, like, in a state that has access to Circa or, like, Westgate in Las Vegas. I'm not even talking Superbook, because Superbook outside of Nevada is different than Superbook inside of Nevada, because that's the Westgate Superbook. You're liable to be just, like, severely limited at any moment, and the books will just reject your action, or even on fair lines. It's kind of a sad state we live in right now in terms of sports betting in the U.S. if you're outside of certain key areas, because all of a sudden you just have to try to find a way to get money down through alternate means. And it's always, it's kind of like whack-a-mole in that regard, where they're trying to whack us as the moles and we're trying to pop up in different ways to get more money down as well. So just, it's frustrating that books just pull these antics, because, you know, people that actually try to bet seriously, they just say, no, thank you. We just want your ridiculous same game parlay, long shot money, you know, crazy stuff. Because that's how they make all their money right now. So if you're actually betting seriously, you don't have the opportunity to do that for more than a little while. You know, whether it's a few weeks or a few months or a year or two, it ends up typically in a spot where you end up getting limited and limited to the point where it's not even worth it anymore. They'll just flat out reject your bets, etc.
Yeah. So that is my whine about it. It's just frustrating, you know, and cause I did like, I like Tipico. I like the app. It functions well. They have nice top 10 lines. Usually And yeah, apparently I can't bet there anymore. And it just pisses me off. But hey, it was fun while it lasted. I took them for what I could, and I'll still be watching. I mean, I'm still going to be watching their lines. And like I wrote an article for Rotoballer today, and their Harvick line was specifically mentioned. So
yeah,
everyone else, please destroy Tipico for me, because now I'm just irritated, and I want them to fail.
We have one or two people at Action Network that do that as well. They've gotten limited on certain books, and they're like, while I can't bet this, go bet this and destroy this book for me, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. What's your whine about it, Nick?
My whine about it is people complaining about that Martinsville race. Because that was a good race, and B, like, I think you're making up stuff in your head, because somebody tweeted out, and this isn't targeting this person. It's a general sentiment, but I specifically quote tweeted this one because it was one I just happened to gravitate to. A pit road penalty for any of these bubble guys is an automatic elimination. Passing seems difficult. And I'm like, Ryan Blaney passed his way from 14th to first in the last stint. And they reply, well, it doesn't change the fact that it was difficult to pass. Well, passing your way from 14th to first, it shows you can pass. And, you know, he says, well, a bunch of these cars stayed out to get track position. Several of them had to pit. Well, he passed every single one of those that had to pit. They pitted all after Ryan Blaney passed them. Chase Elliott got passed by Ryan Blaney, and then he pitted. Eric Jones got passed by Ryan Blaney, and then he pitted. Like, all of these guys had already been passed by Blaney before they ended up making their pit stop. So Ryan Blaney literally passed his way from 14th to first. And not only that, he passed Chase Briscoe, he passed Denny Hamlin, he passed guys that were fast. He passed Eric Almirola, who took two tires because Almirola had taken two or four or whatever more recently than Blaney had anyway, so it didn't make sense for Almirola to take four. But he passed a bunch of fast cars, even on similar strategies. So don't tell me you couldn't pass here. You absolutely could. Eric Almirola could pass. He made a lot of passes throughout the whole race. It wasn't just at the end there where he was leading. He passed his way forward. You could make passes if you had a good car. You could, if you managed your tires. This was a tire management race for sure. And so kudos to Goodyear for bringing a tire that, you know, laid down rubber, the groove changed. Blaney ended up making a lot of passes on the high side. It was a really good race. And there's no way you can't tell me that was a bad race, because we had, as I talked about, we had everything we wanted. We had some wrecks that I know the people that want to see wrecks saw that, and that happened. We saw strategy. We saw passing. And we saw the dominant car win. Isn't that typically what we want? If a guy is that strong, he should just win. And we saw a nice long green flag run to the end. That was cool. We don't see that at Martinsville very often. That was awesome. And you know why? Because you could pass. You didn't have to wreck your way to get spots. You know, there was no desperation among drivers to, like, I'm just going to dump this because this driver in front of me, because it's the only way I can get a spot. No, it was because we could pass. So anybody complaining about that, I'm sorry, but that was a damn good race. It wasn't the best Martinsville race I've ever seen. I already said that, but that was a damn good race, and I don't want to hear the complaining. I mean, obviously, if I'm on Twitter, I'm going to hear the complaining, but it just, for me, it was like some people's reactions to that was just, are you even watching the same thing as me? Because you're making up stuff that didn't even happen. And then, you know, like, well, all these people pitted. I'm like, well, yeah, he passed all of them, though, so you could pass. Doesn't change the fact it was difficult to pass. Yeah, it's difficult to pass. It's difficult to pass anywhere in NASCAR. But the point is, can you pass? And yeah, you could pass at Martinsville, especially if you had a good car.
One thing, or two things. One, and definitely adding to the excitement is the overall, is the playoffs themselves. You know, Ryan Blaney was basically in a win, get in, or has to win to get into the championship. He did it. That was awesome to see. And then the fact of, you know, I think a big part of why people complain and continue to have these thoughts about Martinsville and everything is just because that's what we've seen all year. So it's kind of like a preconceived notion, or I don't know if I'm using that word right, but you get what I'm saying. Like, it's already ingrained in their head that that was going to be a bad race. And no matter how good or bad that race was, their opinion wasn't going to change. So I think that's a major factor of why people are saying the things that they are, despite seeing a difference on track. Because that race was not anywhere near as bad as the first Martinsville race. The first Martinsville race was fucking garbage. This race was not anywhere near
that. It was just like last year. It was just like last year. Remember the first Martinsville race last year? It was even worse than the first one this year. Because it was so cold. And then the playoff race was really good. And it's the same thing that happened. And part of it is the temperature, right? Like, this race was in 80-degree weather. And part of it's the tire. But we need hot Martinsville races. We don't want cold Martinsville races. Those seem to be a lot worse. And we need tires that lay down rubber at Martinsville. If we're not going to make other changes to this car, which it sounds like we're not, right? We're not adding horsepower back. They're doing everything they can on the aero side to make downforce less of an issue. So then it becomes tires, grip tires, and it becomes the temperature itself, the ambient temperature. So maybe one thing we need to look at is for the future is moving Martinsville back a couple weeks, that first Martinsville race of the season, maybe moving it back a couple weeks if possible to get it in a little more warmer, consistently warmer temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that, came true several times this year, and it's something to keep an eye on this weekend at Phoenix, is once again, the fastest cars in the first Martinsville race were pretty much the fastest cars in the second Martinsville race. Chase Briscoe was top five all day in the first Martinsville race, top five all day in the second Martinsville race. Same with Denny Hamlin. Truex was solid in the first race, solid without the penalty this race. Kyle Larson, top five. He won the first race. Top five this race. Joey Logano, same thing. Almirola, Blaney. We preach it time and time again. I'm pretty sure we talked about it in the last episode we recorded. These tracks that we visit twice a year, do not overthink it. Like, typically, it's the same exact guys, just maybe minor gains. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a big, because I almost overthought it. Like I said, I hit Chase Briscoe top 10 after qualifying in practice because he was plus 130. Plus, he was really good here the first time. And I was kind of overthinking, like, can I really trust Briscoe? It's the same track, and these teams aren't making gains like we've seen in the past. So I still think sportsbooks don't quite understand that, and I think a lot of bettors and DFS players also aren't grasping that concept that – we're not seeing huge swings here, but like you said, good race at Martinsville. We got the final four, and I want to start talking about the championship race, these final four drivers, and specifically I want to talk first on how the championship race and situation affects betting lines, because anybody that opened up sports books this week are probably saying, what the fuck? Because I know initial lines, when they first dropped here in Ohio, Larson, Blaney, Byron, Bell were all like 5-1, 4-1 or shorter. Everyone else was 20-1 or longer. Top 10 lines are looking at right now. We're recording this on Wednesday, early Wednesday evening. Top 10 lines right now on Bet365. Are Kyle Larson minus 1,000 for top 10, Blaney minus 500, Byron minus 500, Bell minus 400. Then you got Harvick at minus 150, Reddick minus 125, and then everyone else is even or longer. And this is not normal at all. Like, we see this. Jim Saunas tweeted out that we see this often in Xfinity races where there's guys that are super favorites. And then it just makes sense for everything else to be like that. I can't believe we're getting this in the Cup Series, though, in these Cup Series betting lines. Now, obviously, we have never had a championship race under this format where the championship winner didn't win the race. There's the aspect of these drivers that are not in the Final Four. A lot of them just take the week off. They're not racing as hard as they can. They don't want to fuck up anybody in the playoffs or anybody remaining in the championship, so they kind of just lay off. But here's the thing. And I'm thankful that these top 10 lines are available, because it's safe to say without any major issues, Larson, Blaney, Byron, Bell are probably all going to finish top six at Phoenix, at least, if not top five, if not top four. But with these top 10 lines the way that they are, remember that there are still six positions that need to be settled inside the top 10. So I cannot believe that we have these lines available, and we've preached this all year, and I swear I've came on this show and said this at least 10 times this year, that I can't believe I didn't take more advantage of the lines when they were available. Well, this week I'm doing it. This is the week that I think you need to absolutely take advantage of these lines if you still can, because what the hell is Kevin Harvick opening at minus 130 for a top 10? He has not finished outside of the top 10 at Phoenix in 10 years. 20 races, Kevin Harvick has not finished outside the top 10. Not to mention, it's his final race. There's no way they're not giving him a fucking hot rod to come put a stamp on this season. This is his best track.
I saw the Twitter comments today, not because they released his paint scheme or whatever. They're like, that thing better be cheated up to hell, too. So there's no way they're not giving a hot rod, and who knows? Maybe they'll try to cheat it up, too, and get Harvick that final win. Harvick gives no fucks. He's going to race for himself.
Yep. And that's another thing you have to consider is there are certain guys that you can pretty much count on or that are going to lean either way. What, they're either going to race hard, someone like Kevin Harvick. I think Eric Almirola also follows into that category. And then there's guys that could take the week off and just go on vacation mode. I think Denny Hamlin could be one of those guys. We also see it with, Daniel Suarez, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, there is still these other positions. And I don't know about you. Have you hit any top 10 bets this week yet?
I think I tracked 13 in the Action app.
Like, this is like, and people have to think like we're insane. But
and obviously I can't hit all 13 because there's only 10 top 10 positions. And you have to think four of them are going to be taken by the championship drivers, at least three, right? Cause, so I looked at top 10 numbers for championship drivers. Out of 36 possible times, right? We've had this format nine times. So four times nine cars is 36. 32 out of the 36 have finished top 10. We were almost getting value on Christopher Bell top 10 minus 600, right? Or potentially something like a Byron or a Blaney at these prices as well. We may actually be getting value on them. It's just so hard to bet those, right? Because it's such a minus number. But the idea is all those other spots are over, under accounted for because of the way they tied the top 10s to the outrights. And you just can't do that when there's 10 top 10 positions available, but only one outright available. So we got a big advantage here. And if I just get like two of Bowman, McDowell, Priest, who else to have? Almirola at like some of these, like Austin Dillon. At some of these numbers, they're like seven or longer, six or longer. If I just get like two of them, I'm already set. All my top 10 bets are covered. And then I just need to hit one or two of these other like middle or shorter guys, these plus 250, plus 300s, plus 180s, those kinds of bets. I have a few of those out there as well. Like I got Denny Hamlin at minus 120 or something like that. I got Harvick at minus 130. If I hit like two or three of those and then like one or two of these longer shots, I'll make money. And so I have no problem just for this specific instance of just napalming the top 10 board there, because the books just kind of screwed up on this one for sure, because you can't just tie top 10 probability to win probability.
Right. Yeah, like there were some crazy lines out there to begin with. Like I said, Harvick minus 130 hit that. I pretty much have it set up where as long as Harvick finishes top 10, I'm making money, and it's covering all my bets, and then I'm making money. Chase Elliott opened at plus 240 for a top 10. He's great at Phoenix. Hendrick's been great at Phoenix. I'll take that all day. Keselowski opened at plus 240. Almirola plus 550. Grabbed McDowell.
Almirola and Bowman. Almirola and Bowman were my favorites.
Bowman opened
7-1.
7-1 on DraftKings.
I got it at 7. I ended up tracking it at 6 because by the time I was able to track it, it had already moved from 7 to 6. But I have it at 7, actually. Mm-hmm. For tracking purposes, we'll say 6 to 1. But I love that one. 6 to 1, Bowman, whatever, 7 to 1. Almirola plus 550, even plus 400. I mean, the dude is a perennial top 10 contender at any short flat track.
Yeah. It's and another guy, this obviously brings in the long shots too. As you mentioned, Austin Dillon's out there. I think he's available. He was at 12-1. I don't know where he's at now. But you know one that I like? And it's going to be weird. I wrote it up in my article. Michael McDowell's sitting at 25-1 on Betfred.
Yeah, it's like 20-1.
But you look at the short flat. Like, he sucks at Phoenix. His track record at Phoenix is awful. But he was 13th earlier this year, and he's had top 15 speed in pretty much every single short flat track race this year. Yep. So all we need is just the basically what happened earlier this year, where there was a little chaos at the end, and McDowell could sneak into a top 10 at 25-1. Not to mention, I think he's also one of those guys that is going to be racing as hard as he can, because that's just the type of guy he is.
I just don't know if we're going to get chaos because we don't have David Starr in the race. Seems like the only time we get chaos at the end of these championship races at Phoenix is if David Starr is involved. Now, Homestead could produce a little bit of late race chaos. Remember the Carl Edwards, Jimmy Johnson, Joey Logano, who was the fourth driver involved? I think it was Kyle Busch. That 2016 year when Jimmy Johnson won the title, we had some late race chaos, but that was Homestead. I think the only Phoenix late race chaos we've had was because of David Starr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't talk about that.
No.
But yeah, it's and this is going to segue, you know, talking about these top 10 lines and the value and how they're tied to outrights. Is this the year that we also need to start betting outrights other than the championship four? Is this the year we finally see a non-championship four driver win? Because Harvick opened 25-1.
He opened 30 at Westgate.
Yeah, kidding myself for not hitting that.
That was literally the first thing I said was, man, I got to take Harvick at 30. I just didn't have a chance to open the app at that point because my friend had texted me. I didn't have a chance to open the app at that point and make the bet. And by the time I did, he was already down to 20.
Yeah. And I know people, I see people, you know, still betting him, you know, at 14 or some of the teen numbers. Do you think that's value still with Harvick or?
Yeah.
Is that getting too short? Yeah.
I think it is. I don't know if my model thinks it is, but I think it is. It's like one of those where I'm willing to possibly go against my model. Dude, Harvick owned this first race of the season here at Phoenix. He had probably the best car. If not, it was Larson and Byron, but certainly by the end of that race, he had, I would think, the best car. Didn't work out. And he's always owned Phoenix in general. It's his last race. He's going to have everything available to him to win this race.
Yeah. That's why I love the top 10 bet so much. Like, yeah, I am so sure. This is my Ryan Blaney.
Nobody is fucking with Harvick in this race. There isn't going to be a damn person that fucks with Harvick in this race. Just like they tend not to fuck with the championship four drivers. There is a person out there that is going to mess with Kevin Harvick in this one. Cause if you do, oh my God.
Man, yeah, I always feel like every time we sit down and record, I talk myself into betting more than I initially planned to, and I feel like I'm getting there again with Harvick. You know, everything we're talking about him and just the whole storyline. Like, you don't want to believe that storylines affect sports worlds, but the fact of the matter is they do. Same with, you know, Almirola, this being his last race. I think he's going to have a great car, and I think. You know, I think he's going to be solid as well. So, do you think, who do you all think has a chance to be a non-championship driver that wins this race? Obviously, Kevin Harvick probably should have won the first race here this year. Who else?
Kevin Harvick. I don't know. I don't really think of anybody else. You know,
what about someone like a Denny Hamlin?
If they're in position to help their teammate, Christopher Bell, I think they help their teammate, Christopher Bell. You know, I don't see JGR giving Hamlin or Truex or Gibbs or Bubba or, you know, I mean, JGR, but the Toyota. I don't see them giving them something to where they are going to be significantly better than Bell. What I do think we could see is a situation like last year where Blaney had the better car than Logano, just because I think he's better here than Joey is, just played wingman for Joey. So I think we could see something like that if Bell is in contention. If Bell's not in contention, sure, it makes sense to pressure the other championship drivers, right? If you're Denny Hamlin, if you're Martin Truex Jr., and you could pressure Ryan Blaney or Larson or Byron into a mistake to give Bell a chance, that's great. But taking the win from them isn't going to change the championship scenario. So it doesn't really help them to take the win away from a Larson if Larson just give up the spot, finish second, and still win the championship, right? So for me, it's Harvick. It almost seems like Harvick or bust. I know that sounds dumb because these other guys are still trying. They're just going to be trying with a little more carefulness. You know, I do like Stuart Haas in general, maybe a Chase Briscoe, maybe an Eric Almirola. But, you know, does Ross Chastain factor in? I mean, he's pretty good here. He had arguably the best car last year aside from Blaney, but Blaney played wingman for Logano, right? He was catching Logano at the end there in this championship race last year. The first race at Phoenix last year, he almost won. So Ross Chastain's not bad here, but I don't really see anybody but Harvick factoring into this for the win.
Yeah, I'm with you. I threw $10. I had a profit boost on Hamlin or on Caesars. So I took I got Hamlin at 33-1, and I threw $10 on it.
Yeah,
and I'm all right with that. Something crazy happens, but looking at the odds for this championship race, Larson's the favorite. And I'm looking at AirPods are wigging out right now. I'm looking at odds to win the championship. Larson's the favorite, plus 160, give or take some on books. I'm looking at Tipico's right now because I want to make a point here. Kyle Larson, plus 160. William Byron, plus 260. Blaney, plus 265. Bell, plus 360. I don't think you're going to disagree with any of that. Do you think that's the pretty much the order of what it should be?
Yeah, I think it's the order, possibly. I'm looking at Westgate because I know they have much better numbers than some of these other books. They're not holding as much. So let me pull that up. But yeah, so if we look at... Go ahead.
So the point I was trying to make and why I was pulling up Tipico's is because they have those odds as the championship winner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they have a group of those four drivers, which would be the championship winner. Like, it's the same thing. But they have Bell at plus 400, Byron at plus 300.
Yep.
And so my point here is just search around for stuff like that because you're likely going to be able to find better odds on weird stuff like that opposed to, you know,
Westgate
just easy
odds. Westgate has Larson plus 165, Ryan Blaney plus 260, William Byron plus 320. And Christopher Bell plus 420. So, like, just much better odds. Shop around, too. Like, you don't want to... Even in the same book, like FanDuel, right, we said their championship and their group odds were different for the exact same group. But even then, FanDuel, while they have some pretty nice odds, it's still not as good as Superbook, Westgate, whatever. So if you have the ability to shop around and find even better odds, not just within the book, but across books, make sure you do that. But I think the order's right. I honestly think Blaney and Larson should be a little closer, though. I don't think Larson should be that heavily favored. I like Blaney here a lot. I really do.
I actually do too. I'm on the Blaney train this week, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
I wish I had a Blaney championship bet because I don't. I have a Bell at 16-1, and I have a Byron at 16-1. So for me, it comes down to, do I hedge, and I know you wanted to talk about this, do I hedge Larson and Blaney, one or the other, both, whatever? I'm not betting Larson. It's too short. Just not betting Larson. I'm just going to take my chances with that. I do think I may hedge Blaney a little bit, take him, you know, plus 260 or whatever ends up being the best out there to win, but I don't necessarily think I'm in a position yet where I have to do that. So it's kind of I'm evaluating it. I'll probably do it. Like, I'll probably give it out as a bet on Running Hot. Simply because if you don't have positions on this and you just want to bet that group, I like Blaney in this group. I think it's such a good track for him. I mean, remember last year, first Phoenix race, arguably the best. Definitely the second Phoenix race last year, the best car. Earlier this year, yeah, it was like Larson, Byron, and Harvick, but outside of those, Blaney was right there in speed. I think he was fifth in green flag speed, So, sorry, it was 7th green flag speed, but he's right there. And now you look more recently, Blaney was first, second, and third, not in that order, at the three races in terms of speed at this most recent round, which of course included Martinsville, included a track that's historically been bad for him, Homestead. So that team has found speed all over the place. And
you remember early in the season, Penske overall was down on speed. Like, especially at the short flats, we were all like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. And that's a big reason why I'm with you. I think Blaney is a legitimate, I'm not going to say he should be the favorite, but he's right there.
He and Larson are neck and neck for me, with Byron also kind of right there. Like, I'd go Larson one for sure. But Blaney should be a pretty close two, and Byron honestly should be a pretty close three. And I do think Bell should be fourth, but Bell's really good at short flat tracks. This is a close championship four. But for me, the gap between Larson and Blaney is too big.
So is that something, well, so then it comes to, you know, head-to-head bets, because there's obviously a lot of head-to-heads out there, and you're going to have, you know, the Blaneys versus Larsons. I don't have odds in front of me. Let's see if there's any that I can quickly
FanDuel
grab.
FanDuel has minus 146 for Larson, plus 108 for Blaney. Well, I said I like him close. I don't know. Like, first of all, that's a lot of hold. Second of all, I'm looking for more for like plus 110, plus 115 on Blaney versus Larson.
So that's where it'd have to be for you to get that?
Yeah, I think if I saw a plus 115 on Blaney versus Larson, I'd snap up the plus 115.
Okay. While I look for that,
I don't think Larson's miles ahead of Ryan Blaney here. We haven't seen him be miles ahead of Ryan Blaney here except in one race, and that was the first race this year. The last in this car, I should say, right? The two races last year, Blaney was the best car, both of them. I would argue.
Mm-hmm. While I look around for these head-to-heads, because I'm curious, so the DM I got was someone has a bet. He has 200 on Bell to win the championship at 15-1 or 16-1. And Blaney, he has 500 on at 40-1. And his question was, yeah. So looking at a $20,000 payday if Blaney gets it, he said, I currently have some futures tickets and I'm wondering if I should hedge or let it ride. And then he let me know, he showed me the tickets. He said it's a really long odds on Blaney that has got me thinking if I should hedge a bit, what would you do in this situation? And I think, you know, me personally, like Byron, I think you can, it's a lot easier to hedge with Byron because of his odds, but can you possibly hedge with Larson? I think is the difficult part.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'd be worth it.
Well, so it all depends. One thing I was looking at was some of these alternate markets on Caesars. And so if you have money on Blaney and on Bell, it's like, unfortunately, possibly the worst two for some of these alternate markets. Because like if you look at like car number, odd or even or whatever, or if you look at over under certain car number, they always end up like falling into a group with like Larson or into a group with Byron. So it just doesn't quite work out there. But I've been trying to figure out, like, is there a way I can hedge some of these in some of these alternate markets, like winning car number, starting grid position, even odd, over under car number, like all these sorts of like alternate markets to find a better way to hedge. And I haven't found anything yet, but I'm not giving up hope.
I didn't think about that.
How about
odd and even?
Like if you had, because Larson's the only odd. Larson's the only one under 11.5, which Caesars is offering over under 11.5. So it's the same. Oh, if you don't count all the other cars, if you just look at the championship four, you know, Larson odd or under 11.5 is Larson as well, right? So those are like almost the same bet, almost, because there's a bunch of other cars to consider technically. But Harvick, right? Like if Harvick factors in, that certainly changes the calculus on even odd. or over under 11.5, for example, suddenly under 11.5 becomes more attractive. You get Harvick and Larson as your hedge to at +145. You get Harvick and Larson as your hedge to Blaney and Bell, and then you're just hoping to dodge Byron.
Yeah, I so what's funny is I'm sitting on the exact opposite. I have a free bet on Byron +550. Mm-hmm. And then I grabbed Larson 7-1 before the playoffs started. So I was like, you know, I got those two. And I think the only way I'm going to hedge is if I bet Blaney, which, by the way, I found a head-to-head Blaney versus Larson, Blaney +125 on Betfred. Also,
I would bet that for sure.
Also, top 10 lines on Betfred, Kyle Larson -1555.
Yeah, not betting that one.
Like, give me the no, you know?
Right.
Oh, man. Let's see, I know I got a second one here.
Christopher Bell for a top 10 finish is pretty interesting. -400 at Caesars. I don't hate that at all.
You like that?
I don't hate that at all. Is he 80%? I don't know. I mean, if we look at it, 89% of the time, a championship driver has finished inside the top 10. Is Christopher Bell that much worse than your average championship driver? I don't know.
That brings up the question. Do you think Christopher Bell has a legitimate shot to win this championship?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he's good. I'm surprised at that. I know Phoenix hasn't been the best of his short flat tracks, but how can you think this guy isn't going to compete? He's good at this track type overall. He's going to be the only Toyota in this, so he's getting everything he needs from Toyota. He's kind of been on fire recently. Like, he finished second at Vegas, almost won that, won Homestead. I think he's a contender.
I saw an article today that called him the new closer. And I just found it funny because, you know, 2 weeks ago I went on that rant of how he's not clutch.
He's not. Yeah, he's not.
And I'm thinking, like, now I'm thinking, of course, like, Christopher Bell's going to win this championship, and I can just, like, I'm just going to soundbite myself of saying how he's not clutch. Yeah. And he goes on to win the fucking championship. But I will say, though, I don't think Bell has a chance to win the championship. Like, no, I'm not saying he doesn't have a chance. I'm saying that it's going to take some luck for him to be in that position.
He's not
going to
be the fastest.
Correct. And it's definitely, and I'm assuming that you're on this. I don't think that there's enough value at him at 4-1, or I think you can get him at 5-1. To win this championship, do you think?
I'm not betting it because I already have 16-1. But
it's probably pretty
close. But I honestly haven't really given a lot of thought to whether I'd bet him at +400 or +500 because I just don't care.
Yeah,
it's what happens when you're in the position I'm in, where if you took that 16-1 midseason, you kind of just hoping he has a shot, and that's all I care about is, does he have a shot? And yeah, he does. But no, I mean, if I'm giving you advice, I think Christopher Bell probably at +420 is iffy. He's not gonna be the fastest, I don't think, but like you said, does he have a chance to win? Yeah, if things happen, he should be in the mix at least. Like, he should be in that top 6 or 7, which gives you a chance to be in the mix if things shake up a little bit late.
I just think he's going to run 6th or 7th all day. Like, that's just where I see Bell. I definitely don't see him going out there. But then again, he's been a fucking qualifying machine, you know? And we've seen how important track position is here at Phoenix. Man.
Earlier this year...
You're right. This is an excellent Final Four.
It is. Earlier this year, he qualified 5th, finished 4th in Stage 1, 7th in Stage 2. 6th at the end of the race. That's kind of what I expect from this race, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just hanging around 4-8. That's what I expect from Christopher Bell. But if you're hanging around 4-8, you have a shot if something happens late.
Speaking of Bell and his top 10, if I could bet this for you, I would. Tipico has him at -340 for a top 10.
Yeah. Which -340 I do like.
Yeah.
I think I would bet -340. Like, -400 is borderline for me. -340 I would definitely bet. Let me flip the implied odds on that. 77.3% of the time does he finish inside the top 10? I think so. In this scenario, yeah. In any other Phoenix race, no. But in this scenario, yeah.
And that's definitely, you know, that's another thing, you know, that if people are listening that don't know this format, like, this, there's such a gap between these championship four drivers and everybody else. Like, there's no other race on the schedule that this is going to be like this. And can't overstate that enough. Cause like my text group that I was talking about with Betts, you know, they said that exact same thing. They're like, why are these lines like this? I'm like, it's just, this is how it works.
The only other two cars that could even claim to be as good as the four that we have in the championship are Hamlin and Truex. There's nobody else that even sniffs these other four. Not Reddick, not Buescher, not Keselowski, not Chastain, not Logano, not Harvick or Busch or Bubba. Like, these are four of the best six this year. And even Truex has obviously had a rough playoffs. So maybe you could say, like, he's not even in the best four anymore. Although I still think he could be. It's just a lot of things have gone wrong for that team. But Hamlin's, like, legitimately the only other one you could say is maybe better than some of these guys in this top four. And Truex, I think you could argue, is in there. But these are four of the best six this year, period.
Yeah, I was just going to look up green flag speed overall ranking this season.
Season long, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Larson, Byron, 1-2. I'm curious where Bell and Blaney are. I'll have it pulled up here in a second.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one. Season to date, green flag speed.
Larson, Byron, 1-2. Yeah. Bell, number 4. And Blaney 9, which obviously we talked about Blaney, and like Penske sucked for the first half of the season and onward. So they're kind of getting hot at the right time, but that Bell number 4 surprises me. Yeah. Ahead of Truex, ahead of Reddick, Ty Gibbs number 7.
Gibbs is the one that's like, what the fuck? No way.
I think that says a lot about how much bad luck he had this year, because he had a lot of, you know, just wrecks and everything else.
Thrown a few F-bombs on this show. I apologize to those that are sincerely offended. Remember we had that one episode where we had an F-bomb, like, in the intro?
And yeah.
YouTube comment was like, this is dirty.
Yeah, sorry.
Fuck.
I'm not scared of words.
No.
Huh. I can't believe Ty Gibbs is that high.
I can't either. I was legitimately shocked when I pulled that up. Somebody look out for next year, you know, right? Like,
absolutely.
Look out for next year. When we're considering our like preview for next year, Reddick 6, Gibbs 7. Very interesting.
I want to see his win total, right? Cuz I'm pretty sure I'm going to bet the over on Gibbs.
I'll bet over half the win. Yeah.
Mhm.
I think I'm going to be okay on Daniel Suarez under half a win this year. I think. I got it at +130 preseason. I'm feeling good about that one. If he wins this one, I don't know what I'll do, but
here's one for you. You'll stone cold beers in your living room like I did that one time.
Yeah.
average running position, Ty Gibbs 17th.
Damn.
So seventh best in green flag speed, 17th best in average running position.
Yeah.
That's
wild.
Something.
That's wild.
That is, yeah. I have to look up his, I feel like he qualifies well.
I think he has been lately. I think a lot of it was like beginning of year, he was running worse just overall. But lately, he's been qualifying a lot better.
Yeah, that's true. Huh. Yeah, he's definitely someone to keep an eye on next year.
Yep.
you know, he starts qualifying up front more, and that car definitely has speed. But yeah. So looking at, I have Fanatics Sportsbook pulled up here, and you know, we talked about top 10 odds with Bell at minus 340 or whatever I said. What about Blaney at minus 440? Is that, you like that?
No.
Nope.
I think pretty much all these guys have an equal chance of, you know, running inside the top 10, other than maybe C Bell, who I could see having some, you know, just like C Bell moments, I guess, if you want to call them that. But I just, like, if you take 89% of the time a driver finishes in the top 10, I'd still like some wiggle room, because I don't want to be betting right. These super negative money odds. So minus 440 is, 82-ish, 81.5% implied odds. It's good, especially if you like Blaney better than the average championship driver, but it's just so hard. Like, the only one I would consider is Bell, because I think they're all going to be close and they're all going to run top 10. It just comes down to, like, what is your chances of having a mistake? And at that point, I think the chances of them all having a mistake is pretty close. I mean, if anybody, Larson's the most mistake-prone of this championship four. Him and Bell, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Larson makes a lot of mistakes. He, I can't remember the stat I saw, but it was something like, Larson already has more DNFs than Kevin Harvick had in his whole career or something.
Who's our boy, the spotter, Brett Griffin? I saw a soundbite of him. It said, "Does anybody run out of talent more than Kyle Larson?"
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's Larson definitely pushes the envelope for sure. He's the most talented. I don't necessarily think he runs out of talent. He's just so talented that he can try to do things others can't do, and sometimes he doesn't get away with it.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis, sir.
He's, but to be that talented, you have to push the envelope as much as he does.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And, I mean, he legitimately has the most upside of any driver in the series, and it's not, I don't think it's particularly close in terms of just raw upside. But it also means sometimes he goes over the limit because of that raw upside.
Here's one for you. Is there any value? Obviously, you like Harvick this week a lot for the non-championship drivers. Is there any value in betting guys in the top Fords, top Chevys, top Toyota markets? Because obviously, you know, Larson, Byron are the heavy favorites in the Chevy markets, but you can get like Chase Elliott at 30-1 at top Chevy.
I think it's top harder Toyota. With Chevy. I think it's harder with Chevy because you got two of them, right? You got Larson and Byron.
Right.
So even if one has an issue, the other's still probably taking it.
But like Ford, I'm just looking at Bet365.
Ford becomes
here.
Hard because you have Blaney and Harvick. Like, we almost have to consider Harvick a championship contender in this one. Not exactly, but like,
but if he's just sitting there at 4-1 for top Ford.
Yeah, I do like Harvick 4-1 top Ford.
475 on Betfred.
Seems like Caesars doesn't even have top manufacturer. That's hogwash.
Did you just say hogwash?
I had to. It was funny. I thought it was funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Harvick's 4-1 at Bet365 for top Ford. I like that a lot. I do like that a lot. I don't even hate something like a Briscoe or an Almirola top Ford, because if something happens to Blaney, which one out of nine times-ish, something could. Briscoe's 14-1, sitting there 14-1. Almirola's sitting there 25-1.
Right.
If Logano's sitting, if Blaney Logano has a loose Kozlowski wheel. Sitting there 8 or 12. Yeah, Blaney has a loose wheel. So I think the best market to attack would be top Ford. I think I'd take
looking,
Harvick. I think I'd take
if
Harvick
4-1. If you're looking
to
hedge?
Yeah, if you're looking to hedge, yeah. I mean, if you have a Blaney gazillion to one ticket, why not hedge the top Ford market?
Yeah.
Of course, it doesn't work if he finishes second to Larson's first. That doesn't help you.
Right.
But you know, that's an option.
I think that's a good way to hedge.
It is an option for sure. But I do like Harvick 4-1, and then just picking maybe your one or two other favorites. You know, do like a unit on Harvick and half a unit on two other guys. And if something happens to Blaney, you're at most out two units. But on the chance that something does happen, you've got three bullets right there on three different Ford drivers.
Here's one for you. Obviously, we've seen times where lines move massively between practice and the race. We're getting Friday practice this week, then we're getting Saturday qualifying, and then we're getting the race Sunday. Do you think lines are going to move enough based on practice and qualifying this week that you need to get bets in now if you're going to hedge, or can you wait and see who looks good in practice? Because Harvick looked amazing in practice this first finish race, and I don't think his lines changed very much. And I think there's less of a chance that those lines massively change
because of the situation here.
Because of the championship drivers, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm totally willing to wait. Aside from the top 10s, which I pounced on because I figured all those would just get moved because they were kind of screwed up, I'm not really like dying to jump on any bets until I see some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting, but yeah, I don't think these lines are going to go too crazy. Outside, like, they might shift a little bit, but they're still going to have the championship guys, the favorites by far, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
About the only thing that I definitely, like, if I didn't have any bets in right now that I would definitely get in right now, it would be in the Harvick top 10 lines, because I think those are going to shift quite a bit.
Yeah.
But that's just because I'm obsessed with that bet, and I'm ready to go out on a high note on this season.
Me too, man. I mean, I feel like I hit the high note right here with Martinsville this past weekend, and anything else is gravy. I've, you know, nice, strong, profitable year back in the 40-50 unit range. So feeling really good. Solid year once again.
Oh, yeah. Before you know it, it's going to be, I mean, we get what, 2 months off, 3 months off? We're going to be right back here talking about Daytona before we know it.
And I was actually, I was talking about that on my Action Network Slack. It's like, when are we firing running hot up again? Because after this week, it's like, okay, well, when's the next running hot? And it's like, shit, that's already the week before the Super Bowl is the Clash.
Yeah.
It's like NFC, AFC Championship, Clash, Super Bowl, Daytona. Like four consecutive weeks.
Yeah. I do enjoy the off season for a few weeks, but then I'm ready to get back into it.
Me too, you know, man. Like, I'm
pretty much,
honestly, I'm ready for the off season, but I'll be ready for the season in a month or two. Not even, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much started December. I'm usually like, okay, let's go. Let's get back into NASCAR.
Yep.
For the final time this year, we need to make our picks to win.
Who did we pick for Martinsville this past week? I don't even remember. I always forget who we pick.
We didn't pick.
Oh, right, because I was sick. Because I was sick.
Yeah, we didn't do an episode.
I would have picked Blaney. I legitimately would have picked Blaney. So that sucks. But Phoenix, I guess we got to make our picks to win the race / championship if they're different from a championship driver.
Let's guess final four order as well.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Okay. Do you want me to go first?
I don't care who goes first.
I'll go first on race winner. You can go first on championship four.
Okay.
I can't go against, I think Larson takes it. I'm not going to go against the guy that's had the fastest car all year.
Interesting. I'm going against that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you, I was going to say you have to, but then I remember, like, we never made a rule that we can't both pick the same guy. We just never do.
We never. It's more fun to not to.
Right. Yeah.
But I was going to go against that anyway. So am I? What am I? What pick am I giving now? The championship order, the race winner, the what?
Race winner. My pick was Larson, race winner.
Kevin Harvick.
I like it.
Let's go. I want it so bad. I don't have a bet on it.
It would just be the perfect season.
It'd be awesome. It would. It would be literally perfect. It'd be perfect. He was the best car here earlier this year at the end of the race. Didn't work out.
I mean, 9 wins at Phoenix, get his 10th win in his final race. The true send-off, like...
Yeah.
Man.
Like, all right, so first of all, we talk about how Alan Gustafson's bad at strategy. I feel like Rodney Childers has lost Harvick a lot of races recently. Like, two tires instead of four tires. And people love him. He's a great crew chief, don't get me wrong. But I feel like lately, the last year or two, he's made some mistakes that have cost Harvick some wins.
I agree.
Think about Bristol last year when Buescher won, for example. If Harvick just takes no tires or whatever, you know, like Buescher did, he wins.
Yeah. I'm with you there. And I like Childers. Like, I think he's one of the best crew chiefs out there. But
one of the best crew chiefs out there.
Is he done after this year?
I think he's staying to work with Josh Berry.
Okay.
But I'm going to go Kevin Harvick for the win. For the win. That was not intended, but for the win. Forever. It's just... Look, it's got to happen. I don't have any other reason other than it's got to happen. He's great here. Send-off race. He doesn't give shit about the rest of the championship contenders. Let's do it. Kevin Harvick for the win.
I like it. I like it. All right, what's your championship four final order?
Number four, Christopher Bell.
Yep.
Number three, William Byron. Number two, Kyle Larson. And Ryan Blaney, your champion. So I think I'm going to have to hedge. I'm going to have to find a way to get on Blaney, but I also want to get those top forwards. So I'm kind of in a pickle here. Team is coming on, and Hendrick has been worse at the second half of the season at shorter flats.
That's true. It's very true.
Plus, we got the different tire and all that, which I think was debuted at New Hampshire, right?
Yep. New Hampshire, looking at that race, Martin Truex Jr. won it, led 254 of the 300 laps. Logano, Larson was the top three, then Harvick, Keselowski. So three Fords in the top five in that race.
Yeah. And I remember Eric Almirola was really good in that race too. He didn't end up finishing. I think he crashed out, but I think he led laps and was really good. So I think Stuart Haas can bring a solid piece here for Kevin Harvick.
That was the race. That was another race that Christopher Bell won the pole and led one lap, like he typically does.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. Joey Logano finishing second is and running in the top handful all day is pretty notable. Blaney ran fifth at the end of stage one, fourth at the end of stage two. I don't know what happened at the end there. I can't remember.
It's been too long. I feel like he had a pit road penalty or something because, yeah, he was a top five car. And yeah, Logano.
Blaney's always better at Phoenix than he is at New Hampshire, just in general. It's not that he's bad at New Hampshire; he's just always better at Phoenix relative to New Hampshire. It seems like.
Mm-hmm. Green flag speed in that race. Looking at New Hampshire, Truex number one, Almirola number two, Blaney number three, Logano number four, Bell number five.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to end up betting Blaney, too. I know I'm going to.
I'm going to try to find a way to get, like, my Blaney hedge in there. I don't know what it is or how it'll be, but I'm going to figure something out. So I've been looking at all these alternate markets. Like, is there a market I can... I mean, maybe I should just take the over 11.5 winning driver, right? But it's like minus one something. Whereas I could just take Blaney at plus 260. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, while it's frustrating, you know, to find the best way to hedge, it's nice to be in the position to be able to hedge. I will say that.
Yes, I agree.
You know,
it's nice having a Byron and Bell 16-1 tickets. It's too bad I'm ranking them third and fourth in my my championship order. But Jordan, you have to give your championship order.
Well, obviously,
we know who number one is. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going Larson, Blaney, Byron Bell.
Same order, just flipping the top two from mine.
Yeah, same order. You've definitely talked me into Blaney.
It's gonna be a good race.
This is good. I'm excited for this one.
I wish it was Homestead, because Homestead produces much better racing than Phoenix. But Phoenix hasn't produced terrible racing or anything like that. It just hasn't been as good as Homestead. But I think it's going to be a good race. And you add in the Harvick factor, I think it's got potential for, I wouldn't say a wild ending, because I don't think these five drivers are wrecking each other. Unless it's each other, right? Like, I don't think they're wrecking other drivers, or other drivers aren't wrecking them. But these five, I could see coming late race. I mean, remember what happened with Cindric and whoever that driver is that never wins, but apparently won one race ever. Daniel Hemric. Yeah, that was the only race Daniel Hemric has ever won. He used the bumper to get underneath Cindric there. Very clean, like a clean, normal bump use of the bumper. I'll give him credit there. But man, if you're Austin Cindric and you lost to Daniel Hemric, and now you've had the year you've had in Cup.
Awful. Mm.
But I don't want to end that show on that note. So I do think we could potentially see some bumper action between these five cars late in the race. If they're in position to. It's not going to be with any of the others, I don't think. But I think these five could. I'd love to see Harvick bumper somebody for the win. Knock him to third and the different driver passes him for a second to change the championship. And Harvick grabs the win. How fucking cool would that be?
No, that would be...
That'd be the dream scenario. Oh, my God. Harvick bumps somebody, not just for the race win, but knocks him to third to lose the championship.
Are there... Okay, speaking of, you know, knocking people, are there any rivalries that we should keep in mind ongoing right now that we could see payback of sorts this weekend? Not just about championship drivers, but anyone in general that could affect your betting. I can't really think like Hamlin and Chastain isn't.
No, that's gone. That's
they're not feuding anymore.
I don't really see anything. Austin Hill and Sheldon Creed.
Yeah. See, like that's the type of finish I'd love to see this weekend at Phoenix.
God, I know. It was like last year with Ty Gibbs knocking Brandon Jones out of the way, and then Brandon Jones effectively became a fifth JGR car for that championship race. Or not JGR, JRM car for that championship race.
Yeah.
That was funny. Sheldon Creed got the raw end of that deal, but it's a whole nother story. But I don't think so. I don't think there's any like real rivalries we need to be too worried about.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not.
Ty Gibbs
I'm
on
drawing
Joey
a blank
Logano.
On that. Ty Gibbs on. Speaking of, I don't know why I just thought of this, but did you see Carson Hocevar once again fucking hooked somebody at Martinsville?
Did he? I didn't even see that. I saw the wreck. I didn't think about was it a hooker or whatever.
Yeah, he hooked him.
Damn.
I think it was Gibbs.
That kid, man.
And yeah, because I remember the announcers talking. They're like, He needs to learn. He's going to get roughed up in the Cup Series. Well, nobody's fucking roughed him up yet, and he's done it how many times?
I know. I always try to give that kid a chance, and he just makes it harder and harder. I'll have to go back and look at that wreck, because I saw the wreck, but, you know, a gazillion other things are going on, so I don't remember the specific details of it, but I'll go look back. Wasn't it, you said it was Ty Gibbs?
I believe so.
There was like a Michael McDowell, a couple of Michael McDowell wrecks as well. I wasn't sure if it was that one.
Actually, it might have been McDowell. I'm going to look it up quick.
Oh, Carson. I think, though, I don't really think there's any major rivalries. Not something that would be decided now. Like, Ty Gibbs can always just wait till next year to deal with Joey Logano. Plus, it's one of those where, like, you know, Logano definitely gave Ty Gibbs a run to the deal there, but there was reason for him to, even according to Denny Hamlin. It just maybe came about the wrong way in that, you know, if Ty had, like Denny said, if Ty had, like, continually blocked him at Martinsville and kept roughing up Joey or not giving him the benefit of the doubt, you know, because he was like, hey, next time Joey comes up to you, just let him go. If he didn't let him go, it would make sense for Joey to do that. But Joey didn't even give Ty a chance to let him go. And I'm not a Ty Gibbs defender by any means, but I saw it. It was Joey just came up there and just punted him the first moment he had. So there could be payback there, but I think it would probably end up coming around next year.
I think it might have been. Okay, here it is. Yeah, I think it was Ty Gibbs when he was, so lap 304 of 500. And yeah, he bumps Josevar out of the way coming off of turn four. And then Josevar bumps him back going into turn one and then just straight up hooks him in the middle of the turn.
Like, unbelievable.
I can't believe he didn't get penalized for it. He might have got loose, but to me it looked like it was pretty fucking intentional. He turned right.
Yeah. But well, hopefully nobody plays a role in the championship outcome other than the championship drivers and Kevin Harvick.
Yeah. Well, David Starr's not on the entry list, so
exactly.
Definitely less of a chance than that. So, all right. I think that's going to do it for us this week.
Yeah,
we'll be back next week to talk about the championship race and this season and preview next season. And oh, yeah, hopefully we get a good race in Phoenix this weekend.
I think next year is going to be really good as well. We've had two solid, not last year was insane, but you know, this year has been pretty good as well overall, just from like a competitive standpoint. Maybe not as good as last year, especially on some of these shorter flat track type deals, but I still think, you know, NASCAR is going to continue to work on some of these issues, and we'll see more positive results from some of these tracks that maybe were a little more lackluster this year. Hopefully. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all we can do is hope. But, yeah, it's going to do it for us. Good luck. Hopefully you get in these value bets and nothing too crazy happens this weekend, and Kevin Harvick gets another top 10 at Phoenix. 21 straight. Hopefully a win, too. Are you going to bet him outright?
I probably will. There's almost just value in betting him just to have that ticket in case he wins.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm going to put a little sprinkle on him. I think he's still out there at 16-1, so.
Yeah.
Might as well.
Yep, I like it. He's my pick to win.
All right. Good luck to everybody this weekend at Phoenix. Talk to you next week. Thanks for sticking around all season. 36 episodes this year, man.
Hell yeah.
It'll be 37 next week.
37 next week. Yeah.
Hell yeah. It's been a good year. Let's end it on a good note. See you guys.